Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to The Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo wah.
So much going on without a game going on. I'm Chris Graham. We got Jerry Ratcliffe here. It's The Jerry Ratcliffe Show. And Virginia football was scheduled to play tomorrow as we're recording this. It's Tuesday as we're recording. They were scheduled to play at 11 a.m. In the Fenway Bowl with SMU. That game, as you know, is off. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the transfer portal. We'll talk, which heated up with the game being canceled. Also, coaching news, Tony Elliott adding some staff members, other staff members going to other places, other staff members being possibilities. We'll have a lot to get into here, Jerry. And gosh, man, where do we even start with all the news from the last few days?
That's a good question, Chris. Probably, I guess, the fact that some of the coaches were retained, which I think was good news to a lot of Virginia fans. One of the few things they've had to be happy about in recent weeks. But, yeah, the fact that Tony Elliott decided to keep three coaches. Marcus Haggins, of course, by far the most popular. He's been here for a long time and done a great job. And then Clint Sinem, defensive line coach, who is a Wahoo alum, and Garrett Touje, who's become a very popular guy in recent years, and how he's developed that offensive line. And he might have had the hardest job of anybody on the Virginia staff the past 6 years, trying to rebuild a line from scratch, essentially, and turn it into one of the most efficient lines in the country this past season.
And he may have to do that again. Yeah, his experience of building it from scratch with the losses on the offensive line that have become apparent. We already knew Chris Glazer, his eligibility exhausted, 5 years of snaps on the Virginia offensive line, a guy that was so valuable the last couple of years. But then the surprise as Bronco Mendenhall steps down, and then the week in between before the hiring of Tony Elliott, you saw some names go in the portal that were eligible to come back. Bobby Haskins, Olu Olatimi, Ryan Swoboda's in the transfer portal, Joe Bissinger also. But three of those guys are moving on. And so with three guys who had starts this year, two had started pretty much every game, and then Chris Glazer, boy, it might be a start from scratch kind of thing again for Coach TJ.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it will be pretty much. Although he does have, they've recruited well the past couple of years on the offensive line, and they have some good potential replacements for those guys. But I mean, you can't beat experience. And like we said, they have really kept Brendan Armstrong clean this past season, and a lot of these guys had good run blocking grades, even though Virginia didn't run the ball that much. But the fact that, like you said, there's so many of these guys have so many starts under their belt, it's almost impossible to replace that unless the guys coming up behind them are just incredible prospects. And there may be a couple in there. I know Noah Josie, who we had on either the podcast or the radio show back when he committed, and Logan Taylor, both of those guys for sure were big time prospects and should help. And then there's other guys like John Leach, Ty Furnish, Justice Johnson III, and Zach Teeter. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I think a lot of them probably got a little playing time this year, or at least some experience in practice. So it's not like the cupboard is entirely bare, but it's going to be awfully hard to replace those guys and be as efficient as they have been over actually the last 2 years, instead of just this past season. They've been rather spectacular. And, you know, I guess a lot of people are questioning why leave now when you got a new head coach, you got your offensive line coach coming back. You got one of the best quarterbacks in the country coming back, and he politicked hard for these guys to come back. But I don't know. You never know what their circumstances were. None of them really explained their main reasons for leaving. Somebody suggested, well, maybe a couple of these guys wanted to go play for programs where they think they have a chance to win a national championship or be in the playoffs. That's possible with Olu going to Michigan and Haskins going to Southern Cal with Lincoln Riley, who looks like he's transformed that program overnight. But I don't know. It's you never know what motivates someone, and I don't know if we'll ever know the real reasons why some of these guys left.
Just to give some numbers, Oluwatimi, second team All-American at center this year. We knew that. 12 starts, 910 snaps. He was a Remington Trophy finalist, one of the top three centers in the country in 2021. Haskins, 10 games, 7 starts, 654 snaps. And Joe Bissinger going to SMU. He's a Texas guy going back to Texas to play. 4 starts, 389 snaps. And we don't know about Ryan Swoboda. He put his name in the portal, still in the portal. No word from him as of our discussion here. But Swoboda also, 787 snaps, 11 starts in 2021. You mentioned Jonathan Leach. He got 2 starts this year. Early in the season, Haskins was coming off an injury in the summertime. And Leach got 2 starts, 83 snaps. A lot of young guys, as you mentioned, Jerry. And Coach TJ's back, so you mentioned the cupboard isn't as bare as it was 6 years ago, but boy, a challenge there as far as that goes. Maybe a good place to talk another guy leaving on the other side of the ball, Noah Taylor, outside linebacker. Now, Virginia fans might forgive Oluwatimi for going to Michigan, Bobby Haskins for going to Southern Cal, even Joe Bissinger going to SMU. I'm not sure how Virginia fans feel about Noah Taylor going to North Carolina.
Yeah, I know. I know he drew some ire on Twitter yesterday, some of the reactions I saw. From what I was told, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but I was told that his girlfriend goes to Carolina, and that was one of his main draws into going across the border. I don't know if that's true or not. But, yeah, that's going to stick in the crawl of a lot of Cavalier fans that he went over to the other side, to the dark side, as they say, the evil empire. But that's going to hurt because, they didn't have a lot of quality players returning on defense to begin with. And he was probably the best one returning, except for Nick Jackson, who was an all-ACC player, but not a lot of experience coming back on that side of the ball. So his versatility and his absence is definitely going to have an impact on that side of the ball, which I don't know who the defensive coordinator is going to be, but we thought TJ had a challenge ahead of him. Whoever the defensive coordinator is going to be is, I don't know. That might be a mountain too hard to climb.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The barn has been family-owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's big-time steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4630.
Yeah, Taylor, a 6'5 outside linebacker who could cover. Remember his interception towards the end of the Virginia Tech game a couple years ago. Where he dropped back in coverage and picked a pass off from Hendon Hooker that really was instrumental in that win. He would have been the top rated guy coming back actually from Pro Football Focus's numbers anyway. You mentioned Nick Jackson team leading tackle numbers, but Taylor's versatility, his ability to rush the passer and also drop back in coverage from outside linebacker kind of made it hard for teams to figure out opponents to figure out where to, whether to block, account for blocking him or or maybe he would be in a zone blitz situation. And also, yeah, just the fact that him not being around, it was an already pretty thin group anyway. Nick Jackson does return, as we mentioned. Hunter Stewart got 5 starts this past year. He'll be back. West Weeks, he had the broken leg in the Virginia Tech game. 1 start this year, a lot of snaps. Josh Ahern, but really just not a lot in terms of guys who had a significant action this year at linebacker. So yeah, maybe we don't see whoever the defensive coordinator is go 3-4 just because there's not a lot of guys. Unless you raid the transfer portal, you might see just by default going 4-3 at least, because there's just we can count basically 4 guys there who had significant snaps last year that'll be coming back. A lot of youth. A lot of talent maybe in the program, but they just haven't been on the field very, very much so far in their careers.
Yeah, and on a defense that had trouble tackling, Taylor was one of the more efficient guys. I think from the stat I saw, he had 70 tackle attempts, I believe, and missed only 3 tackles all season. So that's didn't get much better than that in that regard.
Yeah, for a defense that missed a lot of tackles, he was one of the guys who was more sure, one of the more sure guys there, certainly. So maybe turn our attention. So we talked about coaching news a little earlier with the retention of Marcus Hagans, Clint Centum, and Coach TJ. And Tony Elliott not at this stage committing to where they will be in terms of their staff assignments, though Hagans was wide receiver, Centum was a linebackers coach, and Coach TJ, of course, offensive line. You'll presume he'll be the offensive line coach. There's talk, Missouri assistant, perhaps coming in as offensive coordinator. Now talk about a guy who's with the Atlanta Falcons right now, who may be coming in as offensive coordinator. Jerry, what's the latest there?
Yeah, there wasn't much. I don't know how the news leaked out. Probably from the Atlanta end, but there hasn't been a lot out there on it. No confirmation by the candidate that he is interested. It's going to be interesting to see how Kitchens. I'm talking about Dez Kitchens. It's going to be interesting to see how that develops. The Falcons still have 1 more game to play. And from what I understand, a lot of guys have been contacted and are talking about joining Virginia staff, but all of them have either college or NFL seasons to complete. So out of respect to those guys, I think that's why not much has been leaked out in terms of who might be filling some of these jobs. Kitchens is a running backs coach, I guess, for the Falcons, and is a former co-offensive coordinator for NC State back from 2012 to 19, I believe. Don't know a lot about him. I think you've done a little bit of research on him, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
He sounds like he's paid his dues and possibly ready for the next step.
Yeah, he was. He's a Furman alum. Actually, bounced around the NFL for a few years, practice squad guy, before returning to Furman in 2004. He was there for 4 years. Now, interesting. We mentioned Furman. Tony Elliott also coached on his way up the ladder at Furman, but they never coached at the same time at Furman. Kitchens was at Furman from 2004 to 2007. Elliott was at Furman from 2008 to 2010. So they may have known each other just because, hey, former Furman guy. Hey, what's up out there? Kitchens actually, he kind of climbed the ladder a little quicker than Tony Elliott in one respect. They're both young guys. Kitchens is 43. I know Tony Elliott's 42. Kitchens was at Vanderbilt starting in 2008. He was there for 3 years. He was the offensive coordinator in 2010. That coaching staff ended up getting replaced in favor of James Franklin. And funny, just coincidental kind of thing there, Franklin brought in a whole new staff. That whole new staff included a guy named Brent Pry, who's now at Virginia Tech as the head coach. So one of those couple small world things there. Kitchens and Elliott almost connected at Furman. He was at Vanderbilt before Brent Pry. Jerry, you mentioned he was at NC State for a long run. He was also their recruiting coordinator for 5 seasons at State, spanning a couple different coaching staffs. Atlanta is still on the edge of the NFC playoff race. The 7-8 record this year, we're playing 17 games. That means there's two more games to go. And I think you're right, Jerry. Out of respect to the Falcons, you're not going to see anything announced until they're done, and they may make the playoffs. So it could still be a few weeks before we hear anything, if this is the direction that Tony Elliott wants to go. You do have to wonder what this means for that talk from a few weeks back about Curtis Looper from Missouri. He's the co-offensive coordinator there, also running backs coach. So you'd have a couple guys who are pretty much, you know, very similar offensive coordinator skills, running backs coach skills. Looper also, known for his recruiting prowess. It also would imply still that among the things Elliott would still be looking for, you'd have to assume probably still a quarterback's coach. You could move Marcus Hagins there, because Hagins, of course, has been a great wide receivers coach the last few years under Bronco Mendenhall, but he does have that background. He was the starting QB at Virginia for a couple of years, played wide out in the NFL. He has a relationship, I'm sure, with Brandon Armstrong that could be very valuable next year. But there's still quite a few positions left to fill. And, we've got a lot of bowl games finishing up this week. Playoffs will be playing out in the next, there'll be at least two playoff teams done by Friday night. NFL situations are getting more fluid. So we may be hearing more news, but we at least know three guys.
Yeah, and I kind of thought for sure that Hagins would be, if they retained anyone, I was 99.9% sure Hagins would be it, because he's been here on a couple of different staffs and is a very popular guy in the community. As you know, we had him on a podcast before the season began, and I know Virginia fans who liked him, but they fell in love with him after they listened to that podcast, because he's such a good guy, not only just a coach, but he reaches out to these kids, and it's takes the relationship to another level about team and school and community and pride. And he's reached out to the community as well. He's done so many things that have enamored him to the city of Charlottesville and Wahoo Nation. And his track record speaks for itself. He's turned out some of the best receivers Virginia's ever had. I kind of hope that they keep him at wide receivers, just because he's done such an incredible job. I know a couple of schools came after him in the offseason last year, and he said, "I'm a Wahoo. I'm going to stay a Wahoo." So that was a big bonus, I think, in bringing him back. Clint sent him. Was in his first year as defensive line coach, so I'm not sure he had a whole lot to work with this past year. But apparently he impressed Elliott enough to be retained. And then we already talked about 2J. I know his everything I've heard feedback is that the players love him, and he develops a great relationship with them. We heard him during the season. I think they called him Pops or stuff like that. And, they seem to have a great relationship. So seems like three solid hires. And the fact that one thing that's kind of gone under the radar is the Smotherman hire as the strength and conditioning coach. He was assistant down at Clemson and known as the get back guy, as I think we've said before. He's responsible for keeping a very excited Coach Venables off the field and on the sidelines. He's a big dude, so I don't think that was much of a problem. But strength and conditioning coach is a very valuable position on any staff. And I learned that back in the day when John Gamble was the strength and conditioning coach for George Welsh. And those guys spend more time with the players than any of the other coaches do. And they form real relationships. The strength and conditioning coaches are the ones that players go to, I think, most when they're having a girlfriend problem or a family problem or any other kind of off-the-field problems, or maybe even some on-the-field problems. But I know John Gamble, when he left, it left a big hole in Virginia's football program because the players were so close to him. And what an incredible guy he was. I'm sure Smotherman is going to have that same kind of relationship. So we can't discount that hire either. That was a very valuable hire.
UVA Orthopedics and Sports Medicine boasts one of the finest teams of doctors in the country, and they're right here in Charlottesville to not only provide care for the University of Virginia athletic teams, but also the Charlottesville and Central Virginia communities. UVA Orthopedics has been a proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show for the past 2 years, with numerous team members featured in weekly segments where doctors share great insight into various sports injuries, what causes them, how to treat them, and recovery time. Their team of experts are there for you and offer the best care to solve your health problems and get you back on your feet. Let their team of specialists get you back in the game.
Yeah, anybody that's seen a picture of him and then the resume, you know, when he was playing at Vanderbilt, he was, you know, in addition to being a pretty good player, four-year letterman there, he was also like the guy who won all the weightlifting awards on the in the football program his time there. So he's a guy that, I mean, he worked his way onto the field, and then he kept Brent Venables off the field. So those are two hard jobs for a guy. So, and you're right, the strength and conditioning coach is almost like, I mean, you know, people who don't peek behind the scenes don't maybe realize this, but you know, the coaching staff doesn't have a lot of time that they are allowed to really, you know, mingle with the players outside of spring practice. And then of course, when they're in season, but those strength and conditioning coaches are there year round. And that's your point of contact. They're almost like the, you know, the de facto head coach when you're out of season. So really important job. Yeah, to have a guy like with a guy with a pedigree from the Clemson program, just another that's another feather in the cap for Tony Elliott.
Yeah, because he knows how to build elite players into and average players into elite players, and we've seen that for the last 10 years, and so he knows what an elite player looks like and what it takes to get there, and so I'm sure he'll be a motivational and inspirational guy to all the Cavaliers.
I wanted to pick up on something from, you know, the bowl press conference that we had that, of course, now is invalid. There's no bowl game. Among the many things, Bronco Mendenhall, of course, you know, now his tenure at Virginia is officially over, as we know, since the bowl game was canceled on Sunday. But among the things he addressed, he talked about, you know, I guess when we were there with Tony Elliott a couple weeks ago when he was being announced as the new coach, we had a chance to talk with Brennan about his future, and he was awaiting and still is awaiting, apparently, at least as of late last week, still awaiting the letter from the NFL about where he might fit into the NFL draft process in 2022. Bronco said he didn't need to wait for that news. Bring us up to speed, Jerry, on that.
Yeah, Bronco, we asked him about his opinion, and he said, well, you know, he has so many close contacts with general managers and personnel directors and that sort of thing. And you know, Bronco's been around for a while, so he's certainly got his own opinions as well. But he said, I can tell you what they're going to say right now. And he said, it's not a long evaluation letter where you find out your strengths and weaknesses and all that sort of thing. It's as simple as stay or go. And he said, I think his letter will tell him to stay. I think it's probably good advice because in one respect, because look what it did, that extra year did for Kenny Pickett. He was just a so-so quarterback at the end of his fourth year at Pitt. And, you know, he developed into a Heisman candidate. Some people think he might be the first quarterback taken in the draft. That wouldn't have happened if he hadn't stayed another year under Mark Whipple, the offensive coordinator. And so I think Brennan can benefit greatly from being around Tony Elliott's offensive mind and whoever they bring in as the offensive coordinator. And it'll make him a better quarterback and a better prospect. And I've seen some stuff where he might be second round, late second round. It may be tempting. I don't know. And if he's able to retain, keep all these receivers that are eligible to return, if he can keep them in the fold, that will, I think, help his decision making. But the fact that he's lost all these offensive linemen might leave a shadow of doubt in the back of his mind, because it doesn't matter how good your receivers are, if you're running for your life every play and having to scramble and worry about getting broken ribs again because you can't be protected. So it's going to be interesting to hear what he has to say, and maybe he's waiting to see who the offensive coordinator is going to be as well. But it's a big decision for him, but I agree with Bronco and other people who have said another year of seasoning for Brendan Armstrong would be a good thing.
Yeah, I think as well. I think just the idea of him not playing – Robert and I's offense, very an innovative offense, but it's not something you see in the NFL. And I bet the NFL scouts are in front office are going to want to see Brennan in something that's a little more like an NFL offense. And certainly, you know, we can expect that Tony Elliott, with his background as a play caller and offensive coordinator at Clemson, developing Deshaun Watson, developing Trevor Lawrence, is going to look a little bit more like something that you can judge one's abilities, you know, better if you're an NFL front office type than you could in a Robert and I offense. It's a great college offense. Obviously, it was ranked second in the country this year in total offense, but it might be hard to get a sense of that, a sense of what Brennan can do. One last news tidbit I'll throw out there, Jerry. I caught up on this yesterday. Liberty and BYU canceling series. I know some headlines had it Virginia canceling series with Liberty and BYU. I think it's more accurate to say Liberty and BYU canceling with Virginia some future games. Those two programs are moving from independent status to conferences coming up in the next couple of years. And they need to trim their non-conference schedules down. And Virginia accommodating, FBSchedules.com breaking the news that those games for future years, I think it was a 4-game series for Virginia starting in 2023 with Liberty, most of the games later on, 2027 to 2030 era. And then the BYU series was going to continue in 2023 in Charlottesville. And Jerry, I don't know if you noticed this too. The FBSchedules.com story was interesting. It pointed out that the series was originally scheduled to play 2019 and 2020, just a straight home and home. And then it was renegotiated to be a 2-for-1 swap for BYU. I don't know that that's good negotiating if you're giving them an extra home game. I guess we had to do something maybe to move those games back, but Virginia's out of those now. So some holes in the schedule in future years.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good thing for Virginia. Yeah, that's an awfully long trip when you have to go to BYU. I've made that trip myself, and I know it can wear a team down just trying to do that. And the fact that they got the hell beat out of this past year out there, I don't think I'd want to go out there again anytime soon. But
that turned the whole season around. Brennan gets hurt, and everything goes downhill from there.
Yeah. I mean, what a great game it was for three quarters and maybe a little bit into the fourth, but yeah, once Armstrong got hurt, that changed Virginia's season dramatically. Had they been able to pull that game off and he stayed healthy, that would have been interesting to see how that would have developed. I still think I would have loved to have seen him play against Notre Dame healthy. I would not have been surprised if Virginia had found a way to upset Notre Dame in that game. But anyways, I think it's a good move to get BYU off the schedule. Liberty, you know, I've heard pros and cons about that. It's a short trip. Going down there, you develop another little in-state rivalry. Hugh Freeze is developing quite a solid program down there. I know Jay James, who I used to do some work with WINA Radio and a good friend, warned a lot of people in the state of Virginia when Hugh Freeze came in there to watch out that he was going to build a program there that could win. So I don't know. I was a little curious as to how that series might have developed, but I think the fact that these two series are BYU and Liberty are null and void now, it allows Virginia a little freedom to go out and explore the alliance that they've built with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and see what they might be able to do there in terms of some scheduling. There could be some pretty exciting games in the future with some of the teams from those two conferences that maybe Virginia hasn't played before or hasn't played in a long time. And I don't know. I think it'd be kind of cool to see a Virginia Michigan or a Virginia Ohio State or Virginia Michigan State or Virginia Southern Cal. We've seen that in UCLA and Oregon, but opens up some new doors that might add to Virginia's schedule in the future.
So what else you got coming this week, Jerry? I know we got basketball, at least theoretically, on the schedule for Saturday night. Virginia scheduled to play Syracuse. We'll hope that one comes off. Maybe getting ready for that. But what else might you have in the works the next few days for JerryRatcliffe.com?
Well, there's not a lot going on unless we hear some more news from the transfer portal in and out. Hopefully there'll be some in.
Yeah.
And also keeping watch on the filling up Tony Elliott's staff. Not a lot else going on right now, but I never got an opportunity. There was so much going on the day of Tony Elliott's announcement and press conference that a couple of things, I could talk to several former Virginia players. I never really got to write their opinions of Tony Elliott, so I'm going to try to get those up on the site this week. I'm going to write a column about I was talking to a good friend the other day, and we were just talking about it, and it kind of developed into an idea for a column. Is what if I had told you the night that Virginia played Florida a pretty good game in the Orange Bowl, that 2 years later, this is where we would be? And so I thought I would just write a column about that and examine that and see, you know, just what happened and how in the heck we got here. And it's almost mind-blowing if you think about it. You're on the verge of maybe taking over the control of the Coastal Division, and here you are. All these coaches are gone, most of them. A lot of these players are gone. They've been 11-11 since then. Bowl eligible both years, but didn't play in a bowl. And then, we've got a new head coach and all kinds of stuff going on. So I thought that might be a fun column to write. And just some other stuff off the board. A lot of people might remember Tom Perrin, who was an assistant coach for Terry Holland back in the day. And he's become not only a sports psychologist, but a consultant. It's kind of like Bob Rotella and the fact that he deals with a lot of teams, athletes. He was a U.S. Olympic soccer team's sports psychologist, men and women. He's worked with some NBA teams. He works with a lot of businesses. But I've come to find out that his daughter, Emily, who was our Central Virginia High School Girls Soccer Player of the Year when she was a senior several years ago and later played for Virginia's women's soccer team, is kind of cut from the same cloth as her daddy. And she has opened up her own business, but it's not just sports psychology. It entails a lot of mental health and yoga and all sorts of things that have been kind of melded into one thing. And she's worked with Duke's baseball team, a team that won the ACC tournament this year, and some other teams from around the East, I think Penn and some other schools. And she's trying to expand what she does and reach out to more teams. So doing a story about her and just her new concept of mental health and sports, how it deals with sports. So I think it'll be an interesting story to write as well.
This is supposed to be the week where, I mean, the news in the news business, the week between Christmas and New Year's is supposed to be, all right, catch your breath, catch up on the feature stories you missed out on. We got so much breaking news yesterday, for example. Man, I'm trying to go run some errands and my wife and I are doing some post-Christmas shopping, and just the news is just constantly streaming in from a coaching standpoint, from the transfer portal standpoint. We hope we can get these things done. I got some feature ideas too. We'll just see. It's Tuesday and we're already almost halfway done with this week. So that's without a football game to play, right?
Yeah. You want to plug those stories?
Well, I'm catching up on a couple things, Jerry, a couple kind of like you. I mean, you know, I'm catching even further back. We interviewed John McKnight on the show a few weeks ago. I'm going to write a story out of that interview just talking about mental health for student athletes. I thought it was a great interview, and I think it just deserves from some words typed out to the podcast, the great podcast he did with us. And then also Thomas Jones was with us, and that's been a while ago now. That was before the BYU game. Both of us have written about the part where you're talking about football and everything else. I think it's interesting to dive into, and he talked with us at great length about his career in the entertainment business. So yes. I want to dive into that side of things with Thomas Jones, because a lot of folks out there don't know Thomas Jones, the football player. They just know Thomas Jones, the actor, producer, writer, director. And so I think it might be neat to kind of introduce that part. If you listen to the podcast, it's been a couple of months. If you didn't listen to the podcast, shame on you, but I'll give you some flesh to that and see how, you know, let's just talk about Thomas, the new guy who still, gosh, he looks younger than he did when he played football. It's amazing. Which is the amazing part of everything about that.
Yeah.
That's if Jerry, the UVA football news slows down enough for us to both be able to do all these great things we're talking about doing. Right.
Exactly. And if you missed that podcast, it's in our archives. You can go back and listen to it. And since then he's done some of these projects. He had a Christmas special, I guess it was kind of a Hallmark kind of thing. I don't know if it was on Hallmark, but it was it's one of these, I guess, a romantic Christmas story. I'm not sure. I need to go back and watch it. I got it saved. And I think he's done a couple other projects since then, too, and on to the next thing. He's the busiest man I know because he's into everything.
He does not let dust settle. That's definitely the case with Thomas Jones. So we'll
exactly.
Be a good time maybe to reexamine that and link you to those movies and TV projects and everything else. It was great sitting and talking with Thomas a couple of months ago, and we maybe catch back up on that. So, and then we'll hope there's basketball Saturday night as well.
You're knocking on wood, right?
I know there's generally good news on the horizon about the long-term nature of this Omicron variant, but short-term, we're seeing lots of stuff canceled, so we'll just hope that we can get back on track here pretty soon. If it's not this Saturday, maybe next week we'll get back on track, and we have some basketball to tell you about as well. Well, Jerry, last word goes to you here on the show. I'll let you sign us off.
Well, hope all the listeners out there had a Merry Christmas, and we wish them a happy and prosperous New Year, and thank you for your support. It means a lot to us. And we hope to keep giving you great content throughout 2022. And hopefully we can say goodbye to all these COVID issues and put them in the past.
Thank you for listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Get the latest on the Hoos, basketball, football, and more online at jerryratcliffe.com or at augustafreepress.com.